the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Your station for the best Ravens coverage.
Bringing the team to the fans.
It's news from the nest.
We're grateful for our media. We really are, most of the time.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. News from the Nest. Woman Crush Wednesday. Pick a song, we'll play it. Female artist or band, send a request. Platform text line at 410-583-1057. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, Mike Green. A lot of excitement about this kid's potential. Here's John Harbaugh talking about his performance yesterday against the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He thought he got there about three times, you know. So that's what the games are for, right? But he was bringing it. I thought William Kwemko, to get that last sack, was very impressive. It was fun to watch.
I thought Mike Green was really flashed some good things yesterday. Showed up, you know, especially in that big two-minute drill. He was in the backfield all day. So Mike Green, I think Mike Green's going to be a special talent for them.
I'm up in my total to 15 sacks.
Whoa!
Nah, we're gonna go with 10. Because I was optimistic that 8. Question is, if he continues to trend in this direction, he's going to earn more and more reps, and you know, then the disruption will begin on a more regular basis, I would think.
Yeah. Can he do like what Verse did for the Rams? Can he do that for the Ravens? You know, what Verse did last year, winning Rookie of the Year, you know, and I think he had double-digit sacks. You know, I mean, that would be really cool that they have a guy that win rate is pretty damn good. Because yesterday, Mike Green's win rate was pretty damn good. You know, so if you have a guy that can go create sacks by himself, that's going to be pretty cool to watch.
Now, and you heard John Harbaugh mention William Kwemko, local kid, went to Temple. Not going to make this team, I wouldn't think, but this is a guy that maybe a practice squad. And I mean, if the coach goes out of his way to give you some flowers, as the young kids would say, I mean, got to take notice of that.
See, I didn't see Kwemko make the play because I was watching Mike Green, Bob, and he was on the left side and he beat the left tackle. I mean, and he was in there on the quarterback. So I thought it was all Mike Green, but everybody says, you know, Kwemko was in there too, so I mean, they know better than me, but Mike Green was probably right there too.
John Harbaugh, what did you think of the special teams play against the Colts?
I think we came free in the punt rush once or twice. You know, we had some good rushes, and we did really well with the vice stuff. I thought our gunners looked really good. So we had, you know, and also the chance, those reps for those guys in games are just really kind of rare because you only get the three preseason games for the young guys. Most of these guys have never played special teams before, so we'll coach those plays. I mean, the one that got outside the edge, whoever the edge guy was, we'll coach him up on it.
And what Harb is talking about there, the one that got outside the edge, the guy went 100 or whatever it was. He was untouched. So, yeah, I mean, I think Harb makes a good point that first time, a lot of these guys going live for the first time. So it's a really good learning experience. And where you would get nervous as a coach is after watching that film and then going out there, then those guys keep making the same mistakes. Then it's time to replace that guy.
Now you've got your first joint practice under your belt. You have the Commanders coming up in a couple of weeks. But John Harbaugh, what do you focus on when you review these situations?
You're looking at the details, really. I mean, you're not really looking at the outcomes as much. I mean, obviously, I give them credit right at the end. They got two interceptions in 2 minutes, so that was great. Great job by those guys underneath making those catches. So that was disappointing to us. We don't want to throw an interception in 2 minutes. So we'll look at that, and that's why I like it. I mean, it makes you feel what it's like in a real situation to be there and to try to compete and get the stop or whatever it might be. So we got the stops, which I was happy about. But then the rest of the way, just everything is broken down into pieces. You know, everything is a drill that's a part of the whole. And to try to break it down as far as we can, right down to every single individual type of performance or technique or whatever, and try to improve.
Yeah, I guess, you know, kind of what John's saying there, too, is okay, you take a play, it was successful. And on that play, 11 guys get 11 grades. And then overall, you know, as an offense, how did the play work? You know, was it the right concept, the right everything? You know, did the quarterback read the right thing, or, you know, was it Lamar making a play? So I think that's the thing, is each player, you know, got a grade how they perform. When they go in today or whatever, they got a grade. They know how they played. And then the corrections. That's the biggest part is the corrections. How do we get better individually and as a group? All right, like on that last play that Lamar threw the interception, three guys come free, you know, against the O-line. Was it, you know, did Linderbaum, because I saw Todd Monken talking to Linderbaum right after, did he make the wrong call? You know, what was the issue there? Because we've got to get that corrected. Was it a fundamental thing, you know, by the players? Probably not with all three.
It's video at 81057, the Fan News from the Nest here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Lamar Jackson, he was talking to the media after the joint practice with Indy, and one of the questions was the chemistry so far with DeAndre Hopkins.
I feel like we're getting better. I feel like we're great. I messed up one time, though. I didn't think he'd see me on the a route I gave him. He did see me. Overall, I feel like we did pretty good today.
D-Hop made a couple. I saw him have – he had a drop. Then he made a couple nice catches. I mean, he's going to be there when it counts. He's going to be there on third down. He's going to be there with contested catches. He's got outstanding hands. Slant routes and stuff, kind of like the stuff Odell Beckham did last year. I think he'll get some of that, and I think he's going to be big in a red zone for him too.
And then finally, Lamar Jackson, how would you assess yesterday's practice?
Great work. Went against a good defense. Guys caught some great passes out there, great runs. I feel like overall it was a great day. It was a good day.
I'm kind of like with Cordell. I thought they started out good, and then they kind of faltered as it went along. So I thought it was, I wouldn't say it was a great day offensively. I'd say it was an okay day and a learning experience for us.
Since we've been talking wrestling here, old Cordell gave the Macho Man Savage elbow to Cooper Rush. His yeah. performance yesterday, why was he so unimpressive?
I think, you know, he hurries a lot of stuff. You know, where Lamar can be creative in the pocket, Bob, if things break down, he can't. He just limited athletically what he can do. So, you know, if you're the coordinator, you can't call the same type of game for him as you call for Lamar because, you know, the ball's got to come out quicker. He needs better protection, those kind of things. I still want him to get more air under the ball when he throws it.
When we come back by ourselves, count some dough, talk about the many sports subjects of this Woman Crush Wednesday, talk Orioles, Jim Hunter, Birds taking on the Phillies coming up at 12:35, series finale, trying to avoid the sweep, Muscles O'Neal, brace on the soft cast, I guess, on the right wrist, day-to-day, not in the lineup, even in a pinch-hitting situation. Sounds like an impossible task for him, so we get Jim's thoughts on the team final 7 weeks. NFL lunch, 1 o'clock, Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com, joins us as he does every Wednesday to talk about the National Football League, and in particular, the AFC North, and then the American League East report, what happened last night. Boston's on fire, Yankees not so much. Ton of day baseball, too. We'll get into that.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
That as well.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or selling?
I'm not gonna buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Orioles and Phillies coming up in about 15 minutes. Keep you up to date on the score of that one. Ravens walkthrough today, not open to the media, but tomorrow night, M&T Bank Stadium preseason opener against the Colts. All sorts of zaniness flying around in the world of sports before we get to that. Let's count some dough, hopefully. A little midweek buy or sell.
Yep, we're making some money today. The Dow is up 115. S&P's up 45. NASDAQ's up 209. DraftKings is up 86 cents. Under Armour's up 3 cents. And the reason all this stuff is green, Apple's up almost $12 today.
For what reason?
Let me see.
Apple just got bought by ESPN.
That's right. They're going to show the WrestleMania.
The iPhone maker is going to boost its investment in domestic manufacturing by $100 billion. Damn. That brings its total U.S. investment to $600 billion over the next 4 years.
How's my Android looking?
All right, we'll start with other sports topics here with the team that the Orioles are taking on this week. Kyle Schwarber in particular. Well, he killed the Orioles the other night with a pair of homers, including a grand slam, bringing his grand total on the season to 40 bombs. He will undoubtedly surpass his previous career high of 47 at this point. And you start looking career-wise, well, he's well over 320 at this point in his career. So at the age of 32, the question now becomes, can he reach 500? The elite group of 28 players that is in that 500 homer club has not gained a new member since Miguel Cabrera back in 2021. Roughly 30 a year for six more seasons would allow Schwarber to join that group, but who knows how much longer he can stay at his peak that he appears to be in right now. Buy or sell, Bob, Schwarber will end up with 500.
Barring injury, I'm buying it. Because sooner or later, the robot umps are coming. That means strikes are going to be strikes. You might be able to dig in a little bit more, unless you're just, mystified by the break and the pace. But, yeah, Kyle Schwarber, 500 homers. Get it done. And then once you get in, Nolan, as you know, to the 500 home run club, unless you're of a performance enhancement, you're a Hall of Fame guy.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see here. In the NFL, CBS Sports, their entire staff, NFL staff that is, has ranked the top 10 players at every defensive position entering the 2025 season. A lot of Ravens featured very prominently here. Kyle Hamilton earning the top spot at safety. Nnamdi Matabike comes in fourth for defensive linemen. And at inside linebacker, Roquan Smith finishing second to Fred Warner. Now, those two have long been compared to each other since they entered the league in the same draft class, but in this CBS poll, Warner was a unanimous number one pick. Everyone had him coming into that top spot. Are you buying or selling, Vinny, that Warner is a clear step above Smith at this point in their careers?
No, I'll buy it. I think he probably covers better, so I would buy that. But both are outstanding, you know. Just think Warner probably covers pass better.
Let's see. Go back to baseball here. Heading into this final stretch of the MLB season, most division races remain pretty tight and should be exciting for the rest of the year. Always looking at what that target number should be. How many wins is it going to take to lock things up? In most years, I can say at a baseline level, you have to clear 90 wins, although that isn't a constant. Since 2016, there have been three instances of a team winning their division below 90 wins. It happened just a year ago when the Astros did it, I believe, with 88 wins. Right now, as a matter of fact, the Astros have the lowest win percentage among all division leaders at 561. That pace would put them right on the dot at 90 if they keep it up. Buy or sell, Bob, less than 90 wins will be enough to take the AL West again.
I'm going to sell that because I think Seattle's going to really start to cook. They got the offense rolling here in Naylor and a lot of syllable Suarez. They're bringing the heat. The pitching staff's getting healthier. Julio Rodriguez, another 2020 season for him. I think Seattle will catch the Houston Astros and in the process win plus 90 when it's all said and done.
Back to football here. Quarterback depth has really become an arms race across the NFL. Even if the talent isn't quite there, teams are always in a rush to really grab anyone that's capable of taking snaps. Look no further than the Browns. They've had some injuries that have derailed things, but just added Tyler Huntley to the mix this week. That's now six quarterbacks on their roster, whether they're healthy or not. With all this in mind, Cody Benjamin has put together a list of under-the-radar backups who could see the field this year, looking mostly at teams with either no quarterback stability or teams with an injury-prone starter, which leads him to Miami, Tua Tagovailoa, always shaky with his health. Zach Wilson's the current backup, but maybe not having the best camp, Meanwhile, rookie Quinn Ewers, you remember him, seventh round pick, well, he's actually had a very good camp. A lot of people saying it's been nearly flawless in some ways. Vinny, are you buying or selling that the seventh rounder will see some action in the regular season?
I'll buy it, because I don't think the Dolphins are going to be very good. And by the end of the season, they'll probably be looking to see if Ewers can be the guy.
One more for you here today. Not much going on in the NBA as of late, though the Spurs did put themselves in the headlines, giving a massive contract extension to De'Aaron Fox. Now, he arrived in San Antonio at last year's deadline, but didn't get to suit up alongside Victor Wembanyama for many games. Of course, Wemby went down with his season-ending injury really just a few weeks after the trade deadline. That was a pairing that most people were intrigued by, but now really a mystery how they'll coexist. Even still, the Spurs willing to lock themselves in for four more years of Fox, despite having him for he had a full season left before he hit true free agency, so they didn't have to extend him, but they did anyway. Buy or sell, Bob, it was wise for the Spurs to extend Fox, even without knowing the true team fit.
Yeah, I think it's a wise move, so I'm going to buy that. He's an explosive scorer. It'll be interesting to see how he and Dylan Harper are going to coexist. I mean, they've got really good young talent. It all revolves around Wembanyama, though. And if he could stay healthy, we know he's a transitional guy. I mean, he's like this, what do they call him, unicorn dude, 7 foot whatever, who could bang threes, and he's going to get bigger and stronger and faster. So, yes, that's a smart move, because the Spurs, go back 5 years ago, all sports, going back to the 70s, they were the most consistent winner in all sports. Going back to the George Gervin days, through the Duncan and the Robinson, and even into the Kawhi Leonard era. I mean, they were really, really consistently good and championship worthy. They've been on the downslope a little bit. So they're starting to level up talent-wise. They've had, back-to-back rookies of the year. Yes, that's a smart move. San Antonio Spurs, I'm buying it.
Now, before we get to Jim Hunter here in the next segment, it's giveaway time. Two more tickets to see Stone Temple Pilots coming to the Horseshoe Casino on October 11th. If you are caller number 5 at 410-583-1057, you will be today's winner. If you don't win today, don't worry. Still a giveaway to do tomorrow and again on Friday. But here's your chance right now.
Hey, and Stone Temple Pilots, I mean, they're kind of a featured artist Friday kind of band we haven't played in a while. I mean, you know, burn your wicked garden down, man. Lady Picture Show. Do what you have to do. Yes, I could keep naming songs, but do what Nolan told you to do. Win some stuff. Speaking of winning, the Orioles haven't done a lot of that since the trade deadline. We'll talk about that with Jim Hunter. NFL lunch, 1 o'clock. More Lamar, more Harbaugh. Going to also hear from Derrick Henry. Remember that guy? And then Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. We'll talk about the AFC North. It appears as though the Bengals have all of their drama straightened out.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Have they? Now on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, he is on the Window Nation guest hotline, and he is powered by Verizon. He's our friend and yours, Jim Hunter. Jim, what's up?
How you doing there, partner?
Hanging in there, dude. Look forward to seeing you next week down at Pickles Pub when we reconvene on Monday and Tuesday. But we know O'Neill's injury-prone history, right? We've seen the bat play when healthy. Just saw him going a little spurt here. But my concern outside of the injuries, when Baltimore signed him, we heard about this gold glove past in St. Louis, which is, what, four or five years in the rearview mirror. Watching him in right field, old Tony Taters looks like Roberto Clemente, in my humble opinion. So injuries, very disappointing because he's not there, like today. But what do you think of him as an outfielder defensively? Supposedly had this big arm and could do all these great things. Unless I was blinking at one of them, I don't remember much.
Well, he certainly is playing tentative, and that probably is because he's always getting hurt. He's probably trying not to get hurt by playing tentative, and I think that's really affecting him. You're right. I mean, he's won a Gold Glove in his career way back with the Cardinals, but he certainly isn't playing to that caliber this year with the Orioles in his first season. And, you know, the shame of it is they gave him a three-year deal, and he, expecting a big year, had an opt-out after the first year and the second year, and there's no way he's going to opt out of this contract. So the Orioles are stuck with him and his inconsistencies. And, you know, again, Manzolino said before the game today that they're going to get an MRI in his wrist tomorrow and go from there. So who knows what's going to happen.
Now, we were talking earlier about right field in 2026. So O'Neill, we assume, like you just said, won't opt out because who's going to pay him what Baltimore's going to pay him. But, you know, defensive issues, unreliable in regards to hitting the lineup. Couser, all right, we're trying to project next year's outfield, O'Neill, to some capacity. But how important is it for the Orioles, Mike Elias, to go out and get an everyday center fielder, unless you think Beavers or could do it, or Couser or Bradfield could stay healthy, or a right fielder? I mean, you look at the outfield, you see gaping holes. We know about the bullpen rotation, but where's all this outfield depth that we've been reading about and hearing about for years all of a sudden?
Well, the outfield depth, Bob, is still in the minor leagues. I mean, I have no idea why Dylan Beavers isn't here already. He hit two more home runs last night. He's got 18 on the year. He's batting .310, so he certainly is doing the job. But what I would hope they would do, and, you know, who knows if Mike Elias is going to do this, but I would think they would bring in a veteran outfielder. You know, it's nice to have all these prospects, but in a way, they're too young. And young players struggle. I mean, Jackson Holliday's going through that right now. And you need a veteran presence, you know, like what Ryan O'Hearn gave them. And he's a free agent at the end of the year. I realize he's only a part-time outfielder, but a guy like that can come in and really do well. So I would hope that they would go out and get a veteran because, again, they're just too young.
Jim Hunter, our colleague here on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, 105.7 The Fan, brought to you by Jerry's Home Services, talking about the Orioles underway in Philly. Jackson Holliday at the plate as we speak against Ranger Suarez. As a matter of fact, all right, we know the finality of the Grayson Rodriguez season. He's going to get the elbow issue. He was on a podcast saying he's just getting bone chips cleaned out because for some reason he don't talk to the local media, but it's all good. Moving forward, if you're the Orioles, how do you handle him? Do you still project him to be a rotation piece because of his unreliability with the injuries? Would he be best suited maybe to be a power arm in the back of your bullpen? What's the future hold for, at one time, the top pitching prospect in baseball here?
Well, I think you have to wait and see how he comes out of the surgery and how he rehabs. He certainly has the ability to be a top of the rotation starter, but that's if he's healthy. And unfortunately for him, he's the Tyler O'Neill of the pitching staff, where he's always hurt. So I would think, you know, you go through the surgery, you go through the rehab, and you hope for the best for next season. But your idea isn't necessarily a bad one, a power arm in the back of the bullpen. He could be what Suarez was last year.
Jim, it seems like going into 2026, there is a lot of holes. You know, how are they going to fix all the holes that they have? You know, because Elias has got to spend money, but they can't pay for all the holes that they have. They've got to be creative in other ways.
Well, that's right, Vinny. And, you know, they need at least two starters. And Dean Kramer, all of a sudden, is so unreliable. In fact, the Orioles have lost his last four starts. He only took the loss in one of those starts, and that was last night. But he's supposed to be a consistent pitcher in the rotation. So if he's back next year, which he should be, they got to go out and spend money on two starters and or make trades for two proven starters. And one of the things at the trade deadline that Elias did do a good job of is he was able to restack the farm system, and now he has players that he could trade if he elects to do so to get a proven pitcher. So he's going to have to spend money, which he hasn't been willing to do as of late. You know, I mean, the Tyler O'Neill contract was a nice, healthy contract, but they need pitching. I mean, their starting pitching has an ERA of 5.00. That's 28th in the majors, and they're 34-40 as a staff. You know, you can't tell your hitters, hey, boys, go out and get a six today, and we have a chance to win. The starting rotation and the bullpen definitely has to improve. I realize they made all the trades on the guys that were reliable in the bullpen, but he's going to have to, if he's back, and we don't even know if that's the case, if Mike Elias is back, but he's got a lot of work to do, and I agree with you.
Now, if Elias is back, Jim, you know, I think we talked about manager before with you. I just think it's going to be imperative. The big thing is, if Elias is back, is the manager going to be in lockstep with him? You know, that's the thing. Is he going to be, because Elias, you know, gives the lineup card, does all those types of things. Is a manager going to allow all that stuff? I guess if they're not, then they're not taking a job.
Well, I would agree with that. And I think they need a proven manager to come in here, if nothing else, to change the culture. And the guy who's best at that is Buck Showalter. You know, when he was hired, I think it was 2010, the first thing he did was change the culture in the clubhouse. And that is something, a guy like him, he's not going to come in here if he's even offered the job unless he understands that he's in charge of the clubhouse and he's in charge of the lineup. But Elias has proven to hire guys that agree with him, and or if they don't agree with him, he gets rid of them. I mean, Dean Albany wanted to draft Bobby Witt Jr. over Adley Rutschman. He got fired the day after the draft. And the bench coach pushed for a trade last year with a veteran outfielder, and he got fired at the end of the season. So
Freddie Gonzalez,
Freddie Gonzalez. So that's not a good track record for Mike Elias. He tends to get rid of people that don't agree with him, and that's going to be tough to hire a veteran manager to come in here if he still has all that control over the club.
Jim Hunter, longtime voice of the Orioles, our colleague now on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, and has been for a few years now. Jim, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of your Woman Crush Wednesday. We'll talk to you next week. We'll see you at Pickles.
Yeah, we'll see you Tuesday at Pickles.
You got it, brother. Here's Jim Hunter, everyone. It's Vinny at 81057 The Fan. We talk about the Orioles. Extend Adley. Extend Gunner. Hasn't happened yet. Boston, boy, did they get ahead of it with Roman Anthony. We'll tell you about that. And then we'll give you an Oriole update. And if we have time, which it doesn't look like we might, a little funhouse, perhaps. Red Sox extended Roman Anthony, who's been in the majors for what? Not even 2 months? 8 years, $130 million. Remember Jackson Merrill, local kid, extended with San Diego, rookie season. Bobby Witt Jr. is already long-term extended with the Kansas City Royals. Relatively cheap deal for a guy that could probably get crazy $500 million stuff. But Roman Anthony, Nolan, we were talking off the air, forget about Gunner. Forget about Holiday. That figure is not in the cards. I mean, would even a Colton Cowser or Westberg accept a deal like this? And if you're the Orioles, given the way that Cowser's been playing this year, would you even entertain that sort of salary? And on the flip side, because Roman Anthony was supposed to be the next Carl Yastrzemski. Like, what the hell are you thinking, 16 or whatever it is, $1 million a year?
This is really starting to piss me off. I mean, why? Why? It's all these other teams. It's no problem. And even if you want to pay him more money, even if they gave him $300 million for 10 years, just the fact that they could get it done. They got it done. All these other teams seal the deal. The Orioles, it's like they're not even close. There's no rumblings. There's no rumors. There's nothing like, hey, they're really, really engaged in contract extensions with Gunnar Henderson. Feels like something could be ironed out within the next 6 months. No, it's like they're not even talking. And then on top of that, to get a steal, $16.5 million a year. I think Roman Anthony's stupid.
Yeah,
I think
that's
you should
what I'm saying.
Fire your agent on the spot, for God's sake. I mean, when the Braves were doing it a couple of years ago, they were still, they were getting bargains, but it was still fair value. The players were getting really good compensation, but in the grand scheme of what they would become and what a lot of them have become, Ronald Acuña Jr. being at the forefront, it's an absolute steal for the Braves. It's just, I'm so sick and tired of every other team getting this done, and the Orioles aren't even close.
The only thing Scott Boras represents Gunnar and Jackson Holliday. Keep in mind, Jackson Holliday's father made $200 million when he was a ball player, and he got $9 million when he signed as the first pick in the draft. Adley got almost $9 million when he was picked number one, so they got bleep you money. You give me $8 million, you'll never hear from me again. Facebook page gone. Bye-bye. Bob Haney, remember that guy. As me and Boog Powell are fishing down in Key West. But he said, Boras, at the, I think it was the winter meetings, might have been in spring training, was asked, are the Orioles, he said, the Orioles are pestering the crap out of me about this. But Scott Boras historically is, no, they're not even arbitration eligible yet. So why would he, like, Gunnar goes the way he's going. And even though his numbers are down from last year, he's still having a hell of a season if you look at it in totality. When he hits arbitration in a couple of years, and he trimmed a year off of that because he won Rookie of the Year, he's going to get like probably $15 to $20 million just for that particular season. He's looking at half a bill right out of the gate. And Scott Boras, he sees, what did you say, Soto money, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to stack, you know, a couple of last year seasons.
Oh, it's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, but this guy's looking at unlimited, a blank check Holiday to be determined whether he'll get to that level. And it looks like he's certainly trending that way. Scott Boras, like, there's no way in hell he would let his client sign a deal like that.
Mm-hmm. The only two that I think, you know, you'd have a chance, and you're gambling, Kowser or Westberg, because what are they going to be?
I think Westberg's going to be a stud all-star for years
so
to come.
So if you can get that done, because right now you could probably get him at a cheaper deal.
But Moon Man? I don't know, man.
That's not a conversation.
Right, yeah, that guy's like, hey, you need to show me. But Westberg, I'd get on that as quickly as possible. Maybe Adley, who knows? Because Rutschman's been hitting very well since he came off the IL. He's at the plate right now, scoreless top of the second in Philly, and was doing well in June before the injuries. I mean, would he even entertain that sort of thing right now?
I mean, you mentioned his father, Jackson, that is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be all the advisement you need. Forget Scott Boras. I think his dad alone could tell him, hey, you're going to be just fine. Just write out the arbitration.
Yep.
You're going to make three, four, five times as much, whatever the going rate ends up being by that point. I mean, it practically triples by the year at this point, it seems. So it's starting to look like, because Roman Anthony here, what, he hasn't even played 50 games yet.
No.
And when the Braves were handing out these contracts, it was usually within that first year. Jackson Merrill, within his first year, one good year under his belt. If you don't catch him within that first year or after their first year, forget it. Once they start to get a sense of what kind of money they could make down the road and have any sort of foresight, it seems like the conversation's off the table. You almost have to trick them. But what I don't get is if you have representation, this shouldn't be happening. This doesn't even feel real. 130 for 8 years.
So if he turns out to be what he's anticipated to be, and he was ballyhooed
right
coming out of the minors this year, Boston's like, yeah, they're fist bumping.
No,
yeah, this dude's like Fred Lynn. They'll take it. You're Roman Anthony's people. But then again, what's he, 21, 22 years old, and he just got, you know, $130 million in the bank?
Well, think about it like this. Like, what, compared to other average annual salaries for other players out there or outfielders, Tyler O'Neill, his average annual salary with his deal with the Orioles for the 3 years is $16.5 million. It's the same thing they just gave Roman Anthony. That's absurd. That's just ridiculous.
In regards to the Orioles, by the way, we have no idea how aggressive, you know, Elias and by extension Rubenstein are in trying to sign these guys to extensions. I would be like every day texting, hey, you ready to talk? No, we're good. Every day, to the point of annoyance. Ready to talk? Ready to talk? Ready to talk? Ready to talk? Let's get this done. And then if I'm Rubenstein, I'll float out of money, which I'm willing to do, and all of this. But either way, Roman Anthony extending 8 years, $130 million with the Boston Red Sox. And what, he didn't play against Kansas City. By the way, the Red Sox have won 7 in a row as they're on fire. Adley, by the way, just singled in his first at-bat against Ranger Suarez. We'll come back. NFL Lunch. Going to hear from Derrick Henry. And how about Nnamdi Matabike? And we'll talk to those two guys, two key contributors, one on offense, one on defense. Ryan Wilson will talk about the AFC North. It's the Ravens' division to lose. He's a Steeler fan. He's been steadfast at 9-8, 10-7. Anything over the next last couple of weeks that might make him more optimistic, they could be better than that.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.